Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hello and welcome to episode 57 of the Building Better Leaders podcast. We can't quite believe this, but we've done 56 episodes of a Building Better Leaders and Coaching podcast, and we've not had a conversation about difficult conversations. So today, John and I thought we would tackle the beast that was difficult conversations and to look at the theory around what's going on when we have a difficult conversation and what as leaders we can learn from difficult conversations and how you can step into future potential difficult conversations with a more enlightened and curious nature to have more positive outcomes. A lot of what we're going to talk about today is inspired by a book that John loves. Go on, John, talk us through the book.
Which is Difficult Conversations, How to Discuss What Matters Most. Fantastic book. If you really enjoy this podcast, I do encourage you to get it. We'll put a link into the show notes for it. It's by three authors, Douglas Stone, Bruce Patton, and Sheila Heen. And they were all part of the Harvard negotiation project. So it really is interesting. We tackle it from this subject from a miscommunication point of view, really, don't we, Rachel? It's all part of the one of our modules on the Building Better Leader program. And people who've been on that really have got a lot out of it. So, yes, looking forward to chatting through this this great subject.
Yes. So miscommunication. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you will have had an instance in your past where you've had a miscommunication, a difficult conversation that's not gone as expected. There's been a little bit of fallout after. You've had all these thoughts in your mind after, feelings of frustration, anger, upset, sadness, more frustration. I can't believe that just happened. How did it go so wrong? The great thing is there's something to be learned from any difficult conversation that you have and any miscommunication you have. The key is to reflect on the learning so that these become less and less frequent the more experienced you get as a leader. So we're going to look at it through the lens of a miscommunication, but it's also worth thinking that this theory that John's going to talk you through, it is really relevant, I think, to positive conversations as well, like an appraisal conversation or a really good feedback conversation you can have. But obviously we take more learning from the bad things, so we'll start at it from miscommunication and we'll apply where relevant to any leadership conversation. So John, how would you tackle a difficult conversation first? What are the three things that we need to be thinking of, the three types of conversations?
Well, just before I move on to that, you're absolutely right. You can look at this from a very positive angle. It's almost like the anatomy, if you like, of a conversation. So what is in it? How's it made up? And I think, you know, so many times we have great intentions about how we wanted to get something over to somebody, yet it's when it lands, it doesn't land in the way that we intended it to land, and we often don't really know why. And so it's about a difficult conversation is about trying to find out something that's really quite hard to talk about. And why do communications break down? And what are people trying to avoid? And I think ultimately what you find is that people are trying to avoid conflict in some kind of way. And so often the way they go about it, great intention, don't want to upset anybody, but ultimately, they end up upsetting somebody because of the way they tackled it. So actually understanding what is part of this anatomy of the conversation, I think, is useful because, like you say, Rachel, if you're walking into a one-to-one or into an appraisal or just a general chat and we're talking about performance, it's a good idea to know the constituent parts of it. So there are actually three types of conversation. And this is what the authors of Difficult Conversations research. They research thousands and thousands of difficult conversations and came up with three constituent parts to it, which are the what happened conversation. And we'll talk about that in a little bit later, because there's three parts to that. The second part, what is about the feelings conversation, and the third part is the identity conversation. So what were you thinking about when you were asking me that question right at the beginning there, Rachel, in terms of what's actually in a conversation? What sprung to mind to you when you think about a what happened conversation?
So when you think back about a difficult conversation, there is that just initial thought, isn't there, of bloody hell, what just happened then? Like, how could that have gone so wrong?
Yeah.
And I guess for me, what I think about first is what happened for me. And that's my initial visceral reaction, is this was my experience. And then usually when I've calmed down a little bit and reflected that evening, I'm like, well, what might have happened for the other person and how might they have seen things? And then usually when you ask somebody else, they have a different view on what happened that might not even be, there's the place between what happened for you, what happened for the other person. And then there might be another view of what happened in the middle of that space where nobody really sits, because your truth is your truth, right? So that'd be what my instinct would say, the what happened conversation.
Yeah, and that happens like in a nanosecond, doesn't it? That goes through your mind very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much you can sort of cram into that one thing. So when we talk about the what happened conversation, where difficult conversations and the authors of this book go first is they break that down into three constituent parts. So there's truth. So whose truth, as you say, Rachel, is the right truth? You think you're right. I think I'm right. I think you're wrong. You think I'm wrong. So it's disagreements about actually what happened or what should have happened. Who said what? Who did what? And who's right, and who meant what, and who's to blame. And that's the second part of this. So we've got the truth, I'm right, you're wrong, vice versa. And then we've got the blame. So whose fault is this? Whose actual responsibility was it to get this right, and who's right, who's wrong? And then the third element of that is intention. So I didn't intend to get this wrong. I intended to say the right things. I didn't mean to be difficult in this conversation, but somehow, whilst we were having it, that's the impression that you've got. So this is all about the what's happened: truth, blame, and intention. Can you see where that plays out in difficult conversations that you've had, maybe? Can you think of a recent one?
Absolutely. And I think what springs to mind when you're even saying those things are, you know, those lovely diagrams, those perspective diagrams where you'll have two stick men and one person's looking at it from one angle and is like, there's four blocks there, and the other person's looking at it where the perspective, how it's been drawn the other way, and they're going, no, there's three blocks. And they're both right, but they're both stood at 180 degrees apart. So from where you're looking, you are absolutely right, but it doesn't necessarily mean the other person's wrong. It's just that your truth from your view is right for you, and their truth from their view is right for them. And I think if you can separate those out, that's when the blame sits easier, and we can kind of widen our perspective and see the wider truth that can house both perspectives and anything else. So that's the first thing that springs to mind for me.
Yeah, so when we talk about them, when we talk about truth, what we're really saying is that they think that we are the problem.
Yeah.
And we think that they are the problem. So, I mean, how do you understand that? Well, you can look at it, I suppose, in three different ways. At the end of the day, we will both notice different things, and we know ourselves better than we know anybody else. So we see it from our perspective, but we've got to appreciate that somebody else will see it from their perspective, and they know different things to things that we don't know about. So we've got different interpretations. How can we be influenced? Well, we could be influenced by our past, our upbringing, our education, all our experiences, and we apply different rules because of that. So because of the way that we are as individuals, we'll approach it from a very different angle. And I think our conclusions always reflect self-interest. We are easier on ourselves than we are on the other person. So I suppose, what are the things and how do you apply that to make your conversation less difficult? Well, you're thinking really, when you're looking at the truth, it's all about your thinking is around about certainty. And I think that there's a great quote in the book, and it says, certainty locks us out of their story. Curiosity lets us in. And I think if you think that you don't want to be less certain, then you've got a better chance of actually navigating that what happened conversation. So you can do that by increasing your awareness about how you're thinking. Are you moving from certainty to curiosity? That's the first question to ask yourself. You wonder what information they have that I don't have. And trying to understand somebody else's story doesn't require you to give up your own either.
I love that bit, John. I think that, for me, is the biggest thing about not getting pulled into a story, because these difficult conversations can be very easily blow up into unproductive conflict, because conflict has its place and it can be really useful, but it can blow up into a slagging match quite quickly, can't it? But if you can kind of go with the view of me hearing their story doesn't make my story wrong, it's just like I'm walking at the minute and I've got my hand over my right eye and I can't see that bit of perspective. Yeah. Or I can't see what's behind me. Doesn't mean it doesn't mean that what I'm seeing isn't still right. It's just I'm widening my perspective.
Yes, you've now got more information than you had before. And they talk about adopting an and stance. So if you have information and you've got some more information, is there another and? Is there another angle? Is there something else I don't know? And this always circles back, doesn't it, to our favourite strapline, trying to ask more questions than make statements. So asking open questions about their experience of a difficult conversation will give you that more of that information. It's making you less certain, but more curious. Yeah, so those are the...
Jump in, if you don't mind, on one thing that you said, where you said we tend to be kinder or easier on ourselves. And I just wanted to chime in there, because some people, probably particularly women, in these situations, might not be kinder on themselves in that in this situation they may immediately just go to, okay, you're right, fine, it was my fault, and take the blame. And I just wanted to challenge, because that statement of we are kinder on easier on ourselves is still true in that regard, because even though you've just decided the easier way,
I know where you're coming from.
That and go, do you know what, I'm just going to get bulldozed by this person, rather than creating space and offering my version of the truth, I'm just going to say I messed up, I'm sorry, it was my fault, and that person will have won, in inverted commas.
Yeah. And so, and by doing that, you've made it easier upon yourself, as in I didn't really want the conflict. Exactly. And that goes back to where we started this with. It's often in the what happened conversation, or a difficult conversation, doesn't have to be the constituent part of what happened. It's we're ultimately trying to protect ourselves. We don't want darts thrown at us.
Way of protecting yourself is still to take all the blame.
Yes.
To avoid the real conflict that might be the other person was to blame as well, or actually the way you both interact together is the reason why this has been a miscommunication, but neither of you want to deal with it. So one of you avoids, one of you blames.
Yeah.
We still don't have an effective way of dealing with conflict, but you can go away going, oh, and I just took all the blame, and that person you know, this is still an undiscussable there really after.
So in that regard, then, I think what we ought to be giving our listeners is a way of dealing with that, rather than being easier on ourselves by not confronting. What's the approach? You know, we've talked about asking more questions, haven't we? We've talked about being less certain, a little bit more curious. Is it simply that? Is that asking people, I don't actually understand enough. Can you talk to me about this particular element of the conversation? Because I'm trying to understand it, rather than just giving up and going, I'll take the blame.
Yeah.
My fault.
And I think that it can be an easy thing to do. And it is very difficult in the moment because it's not nice to be the one that takes the blame. But for some people, it can feel easier because they're more used to being the victim, or it's just an easier way to let one person off the hook. So I'd approach it with that curiosity of saying, well, can you just stay in a space of silence for a little bit longer? So just holding the space of not saying, yeah, you're right, I messed up, and actually say, is there anything else you think could have contributed to this? So not asking a question of, can you see my perspective, but just asking, is there anything else? And then maybe saying, okay, and is there anything else? And that person then eventually might say, well, what do you think? So you're kind of asking them and on their point, because they're probably too in their own mindset to ever ask that you've got an opinion. They just want to blame you. And you say, well, actually, from my point of view, I didn't know you knew this bit, or you expected that, or you didn't make it clear. So can you see how that was perhaps a little difficult for me? And then
I love the word that you use there, Rachel. You use contribution. I love that word. And I think if we're all honest and reflect back on any difficult conversation that we've had, there's probably been some contribution on both parts. Now, they're not necessarily 50% either side, but when you think about it, there are things that you have contributed to, maybe quite unwittingly. You didn't mean to do that, or you didn't think about it, or you hadn't looked at it from somebody else's point of view. And because of that, you contributed to the outcome becoming the outcome. And I think that is probably the hardest thing for us to appreciate, is that we just want to find a very quick solution and it's you to blame, not me, because you can see your own point of view. But actually, when you become a little bit more self-aware, and becoming a better leader is all about being more self-aware.
Yeah. And so some examples of contribution.
It's about contribution. Yeah.
Some examples of contribution in that regard could be, you know, if you're the leader, saying, I wasn't aware that me not checking in with you regularly contributed to you feeling insecure about making this decision.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that information with me. Or I wasn't aware that my stress at that time was putting undue pressure on, and you didn't thoroughly check the document before you sent it because I was down your neck saying I need it now. And then I've still blamed you for getting it wrong. So it's taking that contribution of, yeah, you've still not checked the document, but I have contributed to that because I've transferred my stress onto you. Or I haven't had the required amount of time as a leader to have a pre-conversation with you. I've made an assumption that you understood, and that's on me. That's my contribution.
So good. Good words. You know, it's that ability to be, when we talk about vulnerability in leadership, that's what we're talking about, isn't it? It's being able to own your own contribution and say, look, I think I might have got this a little bit wrong, and I've contributed in that way. And it's a great leadership trait. And I think if we could all spend a little bit more time, and it's always about spending time, isn't it? Having enough time to think about it and understand where we're both coming from. So that's what happened conversation. It's broken down into truth, blame, and intention. So the second part of which we talked about in terms of the three types of conversation was the feelings conversation. So what is it about the conversation that you have that means this is a constituent part of having a difficult conversation? Well, I think when you're in sort of a heightened state and you're acting probably quite emotionally because all your buttons are being pressed, you start asking yourself, are your feelings about this situation, are they even valid? Are they appropriate? Should I be feeling like this? You know, some of the questions that you might ask yourself is, do I acknowledge them? Do I actually deny these feelings that I've got? And how mindful, how positive are you? And do you show them? Do you hide them? And what even should you be thinking about in terms of the other person's feelings? What do you do about those? So when we've had the what happened bit, that's about the scenario, but it's this internal thinking around how your feelings are affected. Yeah. What are your thoughts when I talk about that from that perspective?
I think feelings are a really tricky thing. And I think with any difficult conversation, I'm sure you'd agree, you need time before you come back and have that reflection and catch up. And the reason is because of this beast of feelings, because they're very nuanced, they're very tricky, they disguise themselves as things. And you might have a feeling that I'm really angry or I'm really frustrated. Mm. That feeling is not the feeling.
No.
Why am I feeling
that's the emotion?
That's the emotion. And, yeah. And actually, if I'm having a feeling that I'm really angry, I'm blaming that person. How dare they make me feel like that? How dare they accuse me of that? Do they not do that? No, they didn't pull their weight, that it's their fault too. With a bit of time, you've got to go, I'm having an emotion that's angry. What's the feeling behind that? Right. Well, have I felt inadequate? Have I felt that they don't trust me? Have I felt shameful of my behavior? Have I acted in a way that I'm not proud of? And I think when you can kind of look at those feelings that underwrite those emotions, it takes a little bit of time and you've got to unpick them, but you've got to bring it back to the core. And that is in itself self-awareness. And I think we need to not underestimate that people aren't very good at identifying their feelings and their emotions. And it's quite, you know, I've got a little 3-year-old and we're reading a book now on emotions that we got from the library. And it is interesting that kids have been taught this stuff now, because the recent work of Brené Brown says that most adults can only identify 3 emotions, happy, sad, and angry. And actually there's over
when you think there's how, you know,
hundreds of emotions and feelings. Atlas of the Heart is a great read that documents every recent feeling emotion. But you've got to keep asking yourself, what's that thing behind it? Is it a shame trigger? Is it a loneliness trigger? Is it an isolation trigger? What else is behind it? And I think we, as leaders collectively, overestimate our self-awareness of how we really feel. And everybody could grow their awareness, their self-awareness of how they're actually feeling, whether that be through meditation or a check-in. But if you are having a difficult conversation or you've had a difficult conversation, you need to remove yourself from that situation. You need to reflect on what are the emotions you're having and identify the emotions, and what are the feelings behind that? And there'll be many. There's like combination. It's like a mixture, isn't it, of emotions?
Yes, and it's all just thrown into the hopper, isn't it? And you're right. It's about labeling the emotion correctly and succinctly enough, I think. And you're right. If you were only thinking about 3 emotions, then there's a hell of a lot of emotions that we've just completely disregarded. And for people who are particularly interested in this element of the conversation, and when you're thinking about it, you're absolutely right, Rachel. Atlas of the Heart, Brené Brown, just go get the book. It's very enlightening, and you'll learn a lot, I think, around that.
the best of intentions, you can still evoke the worst of feeling in the other person. And then the shame trigger that will throw back on you.
Yeah.
Comes, and then you almost feel guilty and bad about yourself because you've acted with the best of intention, but you've got to deal with that like that wave tsunami of emotion that's going to come back on you for trying to do the best thing. Yes. And it's tiring.
Yeah. And Maya Angelou has just a wonderful quote, doesn't she? People will forget what you said. People forget what you actually did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And I that's true. You know, anybody thinking back on a difficult conversation will ultimately go back to the feelings. And like you say, Rachel, you know, it's like loads of emotions wrapped up in that. So that's the feelings part of the conversation. So the very last part of it, the third part that we talked about at the beginning, is the identity conversation. So I think when you've got the what happened, the intention, the blame, the truth, and then you've got the feelings, at a very, very deep level, you have questions about identity. And when I say questions, they're questions that you probably start throwing back on yourself, as in the conversation that you have with yourself. What does the situation actually mean to us? Have we come across this before? Are we getting these feelings to a point where we started to question your own identity? And by that, I mean, it's like, am I competent? Am I not competent? How good am I at this? Am I actually a bad person the way that I have these conversations? Do I keep getting into the same difficulties with this conversation? And so you start asking questions that impact on your own self-esteem, on your own self-image. And it comes to the point where you're like, am I balanced at all in any conversations that I have? I get to the point where I'm really questioning my identity. What are your thoughts about that when you get to that kind of level of self-reflection, if you like, Rach?
Yeah, it's this one's probably the most difficult one for me to get my head around. But the way I can kind of reflect on it is, I think when you have a difficult conversation with somebody, if you find yourself saying things like, I don't know whether they like me anymore, that's the trigger for you need to look deep into the identity. And I like that it comes last because, you know, if you think about a recent difficult conversations you've had, and if one of those things is, am I a bad person or have I done a bad thing or do they not like me anymore? Is one of the questions that you're asking yourself, or do I like them anymore? You know, like that's I think that quite often, if I'm honest. And this is the thing, you have to be honest with yourself. You don't sit in that space. That for me, those questions are a trigger to go back to the feelings conversation and go, I haven't actually adequately identified or distilled and separated my emotions from my feelings. And what are those feelings of not feeling enough or feeling shame or feeling embarrassed or something or feeling angry or that it's unfair, like often unfairness because we haven't properly created a safe space to have conflict and to discuss what's really that I haven't felt heard. So usually that thing about identity I find really useful as a trigger, particularly, you know, with my husband. I think about something the other night, what did he do? A difficult conversation. And I just thought, oh God, why am I even bothering? You know, like you used to have that momentarily thing of like, that's it, I'm leaving him. Like, you know, I'm never going to leave him. But that's a trigger to go, right, I haven't been mature enough. What are the feelings that I'm not, like, what's his truth? What else haven't I seen? And when you catch yourself making those off-the-cuff identity statements, I'd be better off without him, statements.
Yeah.
Are to revisit the other two. And I think that's where identity
comes back. I think you've articulated that very well. The way I would look at it, it is to be careful once you get to the point of all or nothing thinking, yeah. You know, as it, all right, well, that's it, I'm leaving him. You know, he's no good for me. This is not... you know, actually, when you think about what your own contributions were to that conversation, you know, that there'll be something in there that hasn't helped. But it's about catching yourself, like you say, doing it. It's about self-awareness.
It feels minutely good in the moment. And let's bring this back to a work situation. You have a difficult conversation. That's it. I'm leaving. I'm going to look for another job. Yeah. That's an all or nothing.
Yeah.
Your partner doesn't empty the bin or is late picking you up. I'm leaving them. That's you've gone from one extreme to the other very quickly. But that's about not sitting back in those other spaces. And I'm going to bring it back to that key word. What is my contribution? Why am I blaming this other person when I have contributed to that?
Well, I think there's a few other things, and we'll wrap it up with this, Rachel, as in that you can do before and during a difficult conversation. And I think the first thing is to ask yourself, does it actually need to happen in the first place? Or is there something, and is there something that you've got this thing about feelings that you keep going back to quite rightly, is like identifying the right feeling. Do you need to actually have this conversation? Because are you just trying to deal with this feeling? And is what emotion is that wrapped up? So it's about catching yourself and asking yourself before and during the conversation, do you need to go there? Just the second thing is like trying to control somebody else's reaction. like you can never do that. How are you trying to do that? So I think, you know, it's useful to let go of trying to control people's reactions. Because it's all happening in the moment, because there's loads of emotion, I think the third thing that you can probably do is just to try and imagine that this is a conversation further down the road. Is it something that you can imagine, what's it going to look like in 3 months' time? What's it going to look like in 6 months' time? Am I allowing this all or nothing thinking to affect a relationship or a work relationship, a relationship at home? And actually, when I look back, if you were 6 months down the line and you look back at it, you think yourself, actually, that it wasn't worth it. And again, back to your thing, go back and check that emotion. What is it that I'm trying to deal with? And just take a break, breathe, you know, and just think, at what is my contribution to this difficult conversation?
Yeah, I think just to add on that, because one of those things, the last one you talked about, is definitely a tool for giving you a different perspective. So using the time aspect of perspective. But in the leadership realm, difficult conversations are very rarely happening at a peer-to-peer level, that they seem to be easier to sort out, but it will be where the power isn't equal. So either with somebody more senior than you or with somebody more junior than you. And I think there's two tips to better prepare people for going into difficult conversations with that. If you have more power than the other person and you assume a conversation that you're going into will be relatively straightforward and you're not giving yourself enough preparation time, that should be a trigger, because don't assume you know the outcome. Like, I need to deliver this feedback. It's going to be a bit awkward, but it'll be okay. As soon as you find yourself, you haven't foreseen that they might take it well, they might not take it well, they might disagree with you, they might look for other information, they might blow up at you. You can't plan for, like you say, you can't control how somebody's
going to control the reaction. Yeah.
So why are we assuming that just because we're happy going into this conversation that they will be? Because we have no idea what their reaction will be. So give it space, give it time, check your own mental state before you go into that conversation, particularly if the power is difficult. And if you're the person that's going up to a CEO level and you're at a lower level and somebody at the board's about, there's a difficult conversation there, don't be afraid to call time on it and say, whoa, this isn't what I expected. There's a lot of information here. Would you mind if I go and get a drink? Or would you mind if we book time in to have this meeting where I can prepare? And can you send me notes on it? Because I'm thinking about the times this has happened to me. It's often escalated into a very difficult conversation when it's been a corridor conversation that should have been booked in with pre-work.
Yeah.
Or it's been a conversation where I've been given negative feedback, but I haven't been given time in the meeting to reflect on it, or somebody's come with written feedback and read it out to me and I haven't been given it as a pre-read, or should be delivered, like we always say with feedback, deliver it as two separate meetings. It's a lot for one person to digest in one meeting. So check your own mindset, check the power situation. And that's that thing about what you said, you can't control their reaction. So don't be surprised when it isn't what you expected. Give it the adequate time.
I think a lot of people listening to this, Rachel, could identify with those sort of examples that you were given. I think we've all been through that. And ultimately, you end up in, like you say, a difficult conversation you weren't even expecting. And then, you know, the outcomes are not great.
So if you're interested in learning more about difficult conversations, it forms part of one of the webinars in our Building Better Leaders programme. You can access details to that on scaffoldcoaching.com. We'll put the links to the books that we mentioned in the show notes. And thank you once again. We'll see you soon.
See you next time. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching.